No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Or Skype us at BBS Radio 1. Tonight, we're going to have a little bit of a celebration. We have no guest, but last week was a big week in the statehood movement for the District of Columbia. For the very first time in more than 20 years, the United States Senate had a hearing on our statehood bill, the new Columbia Admission Act. Before the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Government Affairs, there was a hearing with seven witnesses. I was lucky enough to be one of those witnesses. So later in the show, I'm going to read my testimony. But right now, we're going to talk about what a great day it was. There have been some criticisms of it, and we'll talk about that. But for the most part, it was really a great day in our movement, and we're moving the ball forward. And so we're very excited here on Shadow Politics and across the District of Columbia. Before I go any further, let me introduce my co-host, Kathleen Gomez. As always, her perspective is needed to keep me in line. So, Kathleen, are you there?
Yes, please. Is somebody recording this out there in the audience? Because, boy, that was a really nice thing that you said, Michael, and I hope you mean it.
I know. I'm in a really good mood.
The audience should know we're joking here, but yeah, I'm visiting and living in Michael's basement, so it's maybe an inside joke, but closeness is very interesting when you're old friends and go way back. So.
And when you're old. When you're old, old friends.
You're old, and on top of that, can't see, and your joints are going. But yes, it was an incredible week. It was really interesting, and I think, I mean, would you like to kind of, I mean, tell them how it all started and how actually, you know, you and your other counterpart were not going to be included in the hearing.
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible to me that when we started out, they were going to have a hearing on this bill called the New Columbia Admission Act, and it really would make the District of Columbia the 51st state, and we would, for the first time, be equal American citizens. And they were going to have the hearing, and they put the witness list together, and lo and behold, in front of the United States Senate, we found out that as United States Senators for the District of Columbia, they weren't going to let us testify. It was just amazing. And I'll let you tell some of this too, Kathleen, because Kathleen, as she said, is here visiting and staying with us for a while and helping us out on several different projects, was instrumental in helping me get on the witness list and get to testify. And it was just incredible at first, wasn't it, Kathleen?
It was. You know, it's funny because I've been gone, you know, from D.C. for quite a while. And I think when you're in D.C. for a long period of time, there's so much that goes on in politics, and it's a really still one industry town, that it becomes, you know, very obvious if you're in this inner circle, like who ranks where and who does this, and it's almost very like, you know, what do they call it? The caste system, right?
Yeah.
And after a while, you get stuck in this caste system. Well, that's kind of probably why people say everyone should leave DC and come back, because when I came back and I heard this, to me, it was like, well, there's no way this is going to happen. Let's just go down there and camp in their office, because how could you have a Senate hearing and not invite the two elected senators to speak? And they actually, to me, should have been your first people who spoke. And you know, we went up to these offices and, you know, talked to the committee. And I'm going to say this because this is a show where I can voice my opinion. I'm not hired by anybody to see. I don't work for anybody to see. But I'm just somebody who's come back after being gone, lived out maybe inside the beltway in the real world. And a young lady was explaining to us why you could not testify and why your counterpart could not either. And it was the most ridiculous thing. It basically was saying, she said, well, there's just too many people. There's seven people who are testifying, and there's a three-hour hearing. Wouldn't tell us who was testifying. And I said, well, I'm sorry, but that's not acceptable. And you were very eloquent with her and very nice, and I was very angry. And she basically said, it is our prerogative to invite who we want to, and we don't have to invite anybody we don't want to. And my basic comment to her was, you know, I am not your servant. You are our servants. My tax dollars pays your salary. And she was like, well, I disagree. No, I disagree. I mean, they are, and this is the problem with Congress. They are in this bubble thinking they know what's best for the people. They know it all, and their attitude reflects it. And I'm telling you, I sat there and I thought, well, now I really understand why people are so fed up. Because this attitude as if, you know, maybe I'll even speak to you, you know, because I'm such a busy person, and I can decide what I'm going to do with this hearing. It's just, that's not the way it works. The way it works is these people are getting money from federal taxes. They need to serve the community. And this community in D.C. needed to have their representatives who they voted for. They voted for you. 207,000 voters voted for you your last election. And, you know, you should be able to speak, because then what they are saying to everyone is, you know, your vote doesn't count because we're not letting your elected senator speak at the hearing before the Senate.
Well, you know, I mean, this staffer was incredibly arrogant. And let me just point out a couple of things, though. First of all, Senator Carper, who had this hearing, was very generous. And, you know, we always felt right from the very beginning, Kathleen and I, that if we could get to Senator Carper and talk to him about this, because I talked to him on several occasions about it, and he's always been supportive, we knew right from the start that it was really the staff that was standing in our way and not the senator himself. And so, you know, finally we were able to reach out through different people to him. And of course, he let us speak. He realized that right away, I think, that it was the appropriate thing to do. But you're right. What happens is these people get isolated and the staff just thinks, yeah, they're above it all. Doing what they want to do instead of what the people demand. And you know, it was just incredible to us because the idea of we're here to talk about enfranchising the people of the District of Columbia who have never been enfranchised, but we're not going to let the elected representatives of the people of the District of Columbia speak. It was just, you know, it was so bizarre. We were like, what do you mean? You're not going to let, you want us to have a voice, but you're not going to let us speak. It was just incredible to us. So we finally got through to the right people and made it happen. And that's, you know, all's well that ends well. But yeah, I think you're right. At first, you know, people do get isolated, and that does lead them to be arrogant. And just on the other side of things, since we've had the hearings, I mean, it's been incredibly successful, in my opinion. We went from 91 co-sponsors the last time we were on the show to, and we spoke about this, to 109 co-sponsors. So That's 17 new, right? No, 9 and 9 is 18 new co-sponsors in the House and 3 new co-sponsors in the Senate. And seeing as we only had 15 a few weeks ago, we actually have gotten 5 in the last few weeks. That's just an amazing turnaround. And part of that was due to the hearings. And we thank, all the people that helped us make this happen. And certainly Senator Carper's at the top of the list. And also just, you know, Kathleen will tell you, lots of people called in on our behalf. Didn't they, Kathleen?
Yes. And I really want to thank those who did. And a lot of them listened to our show. Yeah. You know, we basically sent out something that said, you know, just want you to know, because this was a historical moment, 20 years. Nothing had been heard in the Senate. And Senator Carper did this amazing thing because, as he said at the end of the hearing, it was the right thing to do. We put out, you know, let people know what was happening. We got a lot of response that they couldn't believe it. And we asked people to call in. And I wanted to explain to people, you know, I harp all the time about getting involved and how you matter. Well, let me tell you, after a couple of days, getting maybe over 100 phone calls saying, these people were saying, you know, we want our senator to represent us by speaking at the hearing. Let me tell you, that's what opened the door. And they said, okay, we'll let you in. It's the power of the people. And I can't stress that enough. You know, when you think your vote or your effort doesn't matter, let me tell you, it does, because we saw it happen last week. And it opened the door enough not only to let, you know, you testify, Senator Brown, but also your counterpart, Senator Strauss. And I really believe that without those phone calls, we would not have seen that movement. And that I just wanted to say again, it's really the power of the people makes all the difference, whether you're in a PTA meeting or you're in your local, you know, council or your county, whatever it is. If enough of you take action, you can make things change. And that was obvious what happened last week.
Well, and you know, in the last meeting that I had with our Congresswoman, Eleanor Holmes Norton, a group of us met with her and we were talking about strategy. And that's exactly what she said. She said, nothing is ever generated from inside the walls of this building. And you know, that's an amazing statement when you think about it, that nothing is generated by Congress itself. It all comes from pressure from the outside. So you're absolutely right. And that's it in every you know, whenever you're dealing with a government agency or with your elected officials, it's pressure from the people that makes things work. And that's what democracy is all about. And it's funny because I said to you, Kathleen, when it was all over, I said, you know, I have to remember always what Frederick Douglass said. Frederick Douglass, one of our favorite sons from the District of Columbia, who said, power can seize nothing without a demand. It never did, and it never will. And what Kathleen and I started to do was we started to appeal to their sense reasonableness about the whole situation. We were nice and graceful, and we said, you know, this is in terms of this is how democracy works, and this would be the right thing to do. And you know what? They were just as polite and wonderful back, saying no, 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 no. And it wasn't until we got people to stand up and say, look, we're not going to tolerate this, that it actually happened. Okay. So, you know, we played this game where this is our right. And they would say, well, we know it's your right. And we're going to let you submit testimony like everybody else in America could do. And then we'd say, well, that's
like
not
like a kindergarten
enough.
Class could right. do.
And that's not enough, but you know, and they'd say, well, it's all we've got. And, you know, it just went back and forth like that until we said, no, absolutely not. This is wrong. We're going to stand up. And that's what the people of the District of Columbia ultimately have to do to get this done. And I hope this is the start of getting that done. So Thank you again. I know Kathleen said it, but let me say it too. Thank you for all those wonderful people out there that took the time and effort to call in and say, this is wrong. We want to hear from the people that we've elected. We want them to speak because that made all the difference in the world. And now we're moving. And I know that several people have commented on this. We've had a lot of positive comments. But, you know, almost every day since the hearing last Monday, there's been something in the paper about this. It's been on AOL. It's been in the national news. I was interviewed locally on by Fox. I had an editorial in the paper last Sunday. This is really, the ball is really rolling, and things are moving. We're going to have a hearing at the Black Caucus this week. The Congressional Black Caucus is meeting in Washington this week, and our delegate Eleanor Holmes Norton is going to hold a session on this, and I bet the room will be packed. Because it's moving, and it's all thanks to this hearing, even though we've had critics say, well, a hearing without a vote doesn't mean anything. I think they're wrong. I think it means a lot. It's not as much as we could have hoped for. We'd love to have a hearing. We'd love to have a vote. If the bill gets marked up and reported out, which basically means the committee considers it, makes whatever changes they think are necessary, and reports the bill out. The leader of the Senate, who is one of the supporters of this bill, Harry Reid, said that he will put it to a vote. So let's hope we can get that done. But whether we get that done or not, we've got to push to get that done. We've got to keep on pushing and keep on moving. And this is a big first step in that process.
It is, and I think it was pretty amazing because it also, you were planning to do something that, and so it kind of coincided with the anniversary of the writing of the of our national anthem by Francis Scott Key. Isn't that Francis Scott Key?
Yeah. Lieutenant Francis Scott Key, who was a militiaman for the District of Columbia. And as my dear old dad used to say, you know, it's better to be lucky than good. And we got lucky because Monday, the day of the hearing, was the day that Francis Scott Key, 200 years ago to the day, wrote the poem that was later in the early 1900s set to music and became our national anthem. And he was a D.C. National Guardsman. So, you know, we used the event to highlight the fact that Washingtonians have always been a part of American history. We fought for this country for 235 years, and we have been a part of America since America began, and we deserve our rights. We paid for those rights with our blood and our money and our patriotism. So we used that event. And tell them what we did, Kathleen, to commemorate it.
Well, you brought D.C. veterans. I mean, this is amazing, and I don't think our audience, a lot of people maybe who listen that are not in the D.C. area, you know, I've learned really on Monday that it wasn't until 1963 or 68 that actually D.C. residents were even able to vote for the president.
1961. They passed the law, but 64 was the first election.
Okay. That amazed me, and what we did is we took a flag of 51 stars to all the committee members, both Republicans and Democrats, to thank them for the hearing, for and hoping that they would show up and hoping that they would, sign on to the legislation. And I was lucky to go with your wonderful wife, who's a saint, Pat Brown, and Johnny Barnes, who worked on the Hill in many different capacities, but most of all had served during, I believe,
yeah,
it was
a Vietnam, demolitions
right?
expert. He was
right.
An engineer, I think, that he what Johnny says is that I blew up bridges.
Right. He said he loved it, but now he is trying to build bridges. But, you know, I was shocked because he would tell the senators and aides that, you know, it was like you went to war and then he came back in the shadow of Congress, and which embellishes what democracy and the United States is about, that he was in the shadow of it, not being able to vote. And I was amazed because I'm not sure there are a lot of people who would go risk their life in the world wars and come back knowing that they didn't have the same rights, knowing that they could not vote for representation, that they could not have anyone that would represent their views in Congress. And, you know, that to me is really telling mark of the kind of people that are in D.C. because even though they weren't able to vote, they still did it anyway, knowing that they could possibly lose their life because they felt it was the right thing to do.
That's right. And, you know, we've always been great Americans in this city. And that was the real irony here when we started the whole flag project. As Kathleen said, it was somewhat serendipitous that the hearing fell on the same day that was the 200th anniversary of the national anthem. But we had originally planned on going a little later in the week. And the whole project not only revolved around the national anthem, but it also revolved around Taps. The melody of Taps was written by a guy named Daniel Butterfield. He was a general in the Civil War. And he was a Congressional Medal of Honor winner from the District of Columbia, which is another thing. We have 39 people from the District of Columbia who have won the Congressional Medal of Honor over the years. We fought in every war. But Butterfield wrote the melody for Taps. So I originally came up with this idea because I thought it was so ironic that every time we raise the flag in this country and we sing praise to it through the national anthem, there's a Washingtonian involved. And every time we lower it at sunset, there's a Washingtonian involved. But when it flies above the Capitol or any place else in the United States, Washingtonians are forgotten. They're forgotten. They have no star on the flag. There is no recognition of the role that we've played in America and the contribution that we still make every day. We have veterans. We have hundreds of people serving that have served in Afghanistan and Iraq. We have people from the District of Columbia who are deployed as we speak. I talked to somebody at the hearing, actually, whose son had just been called up again. He's a reservist because he'd already served one tour of duty. I believe he was in Iraq, and he's been called up again. So Washingtonians continue to play an important role. We pay the highest taxes of any highest federal taxes per capita of any Americans, and we serve in the military at higher than the national average. And that's just amazing to me that we're so involved, we're so entwined in American history, and we're forgotten on our flag. So that was the impetus behind doing the flag project to begin with.
Right, and it's interesting that at this hearing there was these seven other panelists, and really only one from the Cato Institute had, I guess, been invited to talk negatively against the bill. But the one thing that I hear a lot is that, well, you know, the Founding Fathers never meant for it to be a state. Well, the Founding Fathers never meant a lot of things. They couldn't see into the future. And so, you know, if you take that stand that the Constitution, that they didn't, you know, plan for this, then they didn't plan for all the other amendments, like women, you know, being able to vote, to having, you know, African-Americans vote. You know, I mean, on and on. I mean, we can't go by that argument anymore, that that's not what the Founding Fathers meant to be, because we know that things have to change, and this is something that has to change too.
Right, and they were brilliant enough in putting the government together to provide for change in the system. But that's absolutely right. They left out Native Americans. They left out people that didn't own property and were under the age of 21. They left out African Americans. They left out women. And all these groups have been enfranchised over the past 200 years, but Washingtonians are still left out. And one thing that you have to remember when you think about whether this is right or wrong, you have to remember that no other democracy in the world does this. Nobody else does this. So we can't be the only ones that are right, folks. I mean, you know, we're pretty brilliant in this country, and we are the world's oldest continuous democracy. But still, we have to wake up and pay attention to what the rest of the world is doing too. And in other places where this has happened, they've modified it. They've changed things. 11 countries have copied our Constitution. I believe it's 11. And all of them have taken out the clause that prohibits the people from the nation's capital from having the same rights that they have. And actually, the district clause, which is Article 1, Section 2 of the Constitution, says that Congress shall have exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over a district not to exceed 10 miles square that may, by the secession of particular states and the acceptance by Congress, become the capital of the United States. So it says exclusive legislation. It doesn't say anything about taking our rights away, but Congress decided to do that, and it gives them the right to do that. And just so people understand out there what the whole statehood thing is about, is that in order to keep that clause of the Constitution intact, what statehood would do in the district is it would shrink the size of the nation's cap, the part of the government, the nation's capital, the part of the city that the government controls, because the section of the Constitution says no larger than 10 miles square, but it can be smaller than 10 miles square. And actually, the part that Virginia donated to the Capitol already was given back to them. So there's even precedent for this. So we would shrink the size of the Capitol to the government buildings and all those things that the government, the Capitol, the Smithsonian, the White House, all those things that the federal government must control, which was the idea of Congress. And so nothing would really change except that the people outside that area, what we call the National Capital Service Area, we'd become the new state of New Columbia, and they would be equal because all states enter the union on equal footing. We would be equal. And it's the only way for us to get permanent equality, that's statehood. If they change the Constitution, if we go for a constitutional amendment, that can always be changed. The 19th and 21st Amendments, if you recall your history books, do exactly that. 19th Amendment was prohibition. The 21st Amendment, or maybe it's the 18th Amendment. I'm sorry. The 18th Amendment was prohibition. 21st Amendment repealed it. So if we pass a constitutional amendment, it could always be repealed. If we pass a law, the law can always be changed. So the only permanent solution is to make us a state, because no state has ever been unstated. Even though there's a couple out there that maybe should be. Go ahead.
Well, I was thinking maybe what we should do is take a little break, and then when we come back, I'd like to throw out to the audience some of the arguments that we heard on why D.C., you know, shouldn't be a state, and the reasons why that it should be. I mean, there's a lot of interesting things that came out of that hearing that was, you know, intriguing, and it was definitely a packed room. In fact, they even had a room for the overflow, which was packed. And so that was something also that was great, because I know that in the past you've had problems with getting people to show up, but they definitely showed up at the hearing.
Well, we're going to play a song tonight. This goes out to Kathleen and me and nobody else. We keep on sending songs out to people, but this is for Kathleen and me. This is the Bobby Fuller Four, I'm sorry. And I fought the law and the law won, but Kathleen and I fought the law and we won.
That's we'll right. So did all of you.
Yes, so did all of you. I feel sorry for Bobby Fuller, but Kathleen and I fought the law, and Kathleen and I won. So yes. Take that, government. We haven't won yet. We still have a long road and a big battle ahead of us, and we've just won a little skirmish, but it feels good, and it feels like we're on the move. And as Kathleen said, we heard a lot of arguments for and against statehood when we were in there, and some of them were pretty absurd, huh, Kathleen?
Yeah, they were. First of all,
a little strange.
He was strange. First of all, I'd like to remind the audience that they can call in at 888-429-5471 or Skype their questions to BBS Radio 1. Again, 888-429-5471. We'd love to hear from anybody out there who was at the hearing or went with us on our visits to the committee members. But yes, you know, it funny that there was some feedback this whole week, you know, on Washington Post. And one of the comments that this gentleman put in was just amazing, that the symmetry of the flag would be completely skewed, and our flag would just not be what it should be because if you added one more star, believe me, you can't tell the difference. We have 51 stars and it looks the same, you know. Well, so that was like crazy.
Yeah, and actually, just to show you how weird this gets, you know, that we got I'm sorry. I was trying to read and talk at the same time. We
can't do that. You can't multitask.
Skype it in. But anyway, the 51 star flag has 6 rows, and the 50 star flag has 9 rows. So it's actually more symmetrical because it's an even number, and there's 3 rows of 9 stars and 3 rows of 8 stars, and the regular flag has 9 rows of stars. So actually, when you look at them, you can't tell the difference. You have to count the stars. We counted them 3 times to make sure we were giving out 51 star flags and not 50. But it actually is more symmetrical. And these are the kind of crazy arguments people say. The founding fathers didn't want it. You know, the
I apologize. Wait a minute. I apologize to the audience. I gave you the wrong number. It rarely happens, but I did. So let me give you the right number for the station that we're on right now, and that's 888-627-6008, and that's on Station 1. So again, 888-627-6008, but you Skype us with your questions on BBS Radio 1.
You know, this is why, so that you know, this is why I had to count the stars several times, because Kathleen's not good with numbers. So we had to count the flag several times to make sure. And let me also apologize. I really should apologize to the staff because of the Homeland Security Committee, because I had no alternative but to unleash Kathleen on them. She was the bad cop, and she's a badass. And so anybody we scared out there, we're sorry, but we had you left me no choice. It was either,
right.
You know, I'm from New Jersey, so originally, so it was either put a horse's head in your bed or unleash Kathleen.
And that's right. And I'm from the border.
All over me, so I unleashed Kathleen.
Well, listen, you know, I just want to tell people that, you know, so many times everyone's intimidated by the people they elect, who once gets into office, they feel like they become better than the people who voted them in. And, you know, you go up into the Congress, and yes, those halls are beautiful. The buildings are magnificent. But we have to remember one thing, and I will say this over and over and over again until I think people really get it. We're their boss. We are their boss. Even when it comes to the senators and the congressmen, they get paid by our federal tax money. So there's no reason for you to be intimidated. You know, we're not saying be disrespectful, because we were very respectful, but we were very firm in that these people were wrong. And I think they're not used to hearing that. I mean, she was really trying to explain to us why she was right and why we were wrong. We say, no, you don't get it. You are wrong. And I think it just really stunned her that people would say that to her. And I think that that's one thing I am certain of. The power is with the people. It is not in these halls. It is not in the monuments. It's not in the people we elect. It's in with us. And we just have to understand that and embrace it. And we can make this a better place and change the things that are not working. You just have to understand that one concept. They work for us.
Well, and that's exactly what we did when we went in there and testified. We said, you know, there were people that explained it. There were academics, people that we revere in this city, like Alice Rivlin, Dr. Alice Rivlin of the Brookings Institute, who a Brookings Institution who explained the technical parts of it, and a professor of Viet Dinh, and other people. But there were also those of us, actually the other senator, Paul Strauss, explained some of the technical aspects of it. But I wrapped up at the end, and I said, it's the wrong thing, it's the wrong thing, it's the wrong thing. That's what you have to understand, that you guys are wrong. On every level, this is wrong. And it doesn't matter that whether we're financially stable. We talked about things like that. It's the stability of the District of Columbia. It's very stable financially. But
I was shocked.
That's not relevant. Right. What's relevant
But it is interesting. The D.C. Government since, what was it, 1997, am I correct, has given a balanced budget to Congress every year.
2007, I believe it is. Okay. We had the control board until 2001. But this year, we're actually giving $500 million back to the voters, which is not something I agree with. But it just shows how financially stable we are that we can do something like that.
Well, explain why you're not in favor of it, though.
Because I think we should use it to improve things in the District of Columbia. We still have a big gap in the District of Columbia in our school system between poor and middle-class children, between white and black kids. We still have problems in our city that we've lost over 36,000 units of affordable housing in the last 10 years. And we need to reinvest, I think, in our city. And that's really what bothers me about giving the money back. But you have to say, if you can afford to do it, it just shows how financially stable you really are. But in the end, it's not a matter of what our finances are. I mean, look at Detroit. Nobody's talking about taking the rights away from the people of Michigan. They also talk about corruption, and we've had plenty of it in the District of Columbia. I'll be the first one to say that. But you know what? I'm from New Jersey. My daughter lives in Chicago. There are plenty other places, and with the same level of corruption, that we've never taken the rights away from the people of New Jersey, whether they can get across the George Washington Bridge or not. And we've never taken the rights away from the people of Chicago, where they have legendary, you know, I think their last three or four governors have gone to jail, and as we all understand, dead people still vote. You can vote, you know, we say you can move out of the United States and vote as long as you live. Well, if you live in Chicago, you can vote beyond as long as you live. So, you know, there are plenty of places where there's been corruption and they haven't usurped the rights of the people. And now, okay, go ahead, Kathleen.
I was just going to say we have a caller. Bonnie on line one.
Oh, okay.
Bonnie, are you there?
Hey, guys. Yeah.
Yeah.
How are you?
Good. What do you think of statehood?
Well, I think we do. I think we deserve it.
Yeah, I do too.
I'm for it. I want to be like the president.
Yeah, who doesn't? That's another thing we should mention, that when President Obama, which, you know, this is a lot of what the momentum is right now, some school kid who we should give an award to asked the president what he thought of statehood, and the president said, I'm for it.
That's right. It's about time. Well, it's the right thing to do.
Do you have a question?
One of the things that I just wanted to say. It's not really a question. It's just a comment. I was fortunate to go with you guys up to the Hill to pass out the flags. And the people that I was totally impressed with were the veterans. Johnny and Wally and Barbara.
Yeah.
I knew nothing about those people before that day, and it's just so impressive to have people that have given their lives for the country to take responsibility for themselves and try to make things better for the people that live here.
Yeah, you know, it was funny because I asked Barbara Pittman, who's a retired veteran. I said, I made the mistake of saying, so what duty stations did you serve at the Barbara? And I think Bonnie was there. I mean, it took me 10 minutes to get the, you know, because she listed them all. She remembered every one of them. But it was amazing how many places in the United States and around the world that she had served her country. You know, I was just amazed at it. She had traveled all over the place in different duty stations and had done all sorts of amazing things on behalf of defending our freedom, and that was just amazing. And Johnny was a veteran, and Wally was a Korean War veteran. So we were well represented. And Barbara, I think, is retired recently.
Yeah, the last 2 or 3 years, I think, is what she said. I mean, they were amazing people, and I was just privileged to be able to spend time with them.
Yeah, me too. And I thank you for coming along. Bonnie is a resident of the District of Columbia.
And she's our Republican. She's our token Republican. Are you independent?
Oh, she's come to the light. No, she's a big D, aren't you, Bonnie? Democrat?
What's that? I'm what?
You're a Democrat, aren't you?
Of course I have. I have been for a long time.
Yeah.
Where did I get the impression you were a Republican? I was kind of
proud. I was a Republican when I moved here.
Really well. She dresses really well, and she drives a BMW. So you just assume.
And I live in an expensive flat.
Right.
There you go.
And you've known me for years, and I drive a crappy car, and I don't dress that well. So it's a natural mistake to make. Well, you know, thanks for that, Bonnie. Thanks for calling in, and thanks for going up with us to the Hill, because I think that was important. And just so you know, people out there, one of the senator's offices that we visited, that was an office that Bonnie and Barbara and a woman named Ann and I visited. Was Tammy Baldwin's office. We gave Tammy a flag, Senator Baldwin a flag, and she became a co-sponsor. I'm sure she didn't do it just because of our charm, but, you know, I think we did a good thing, and I think
did do it that day, though, didn't she?
She did do it that day, and
there you go.
And, you know, I think that we need those people to remind. We need those veterans to go up there and remind the people on the Hill that, as Kathleen said, not only that they work for us, but that we're responsible as Washingtonians. We're responsible for the position they find themselves in. We've defended our freedom. We pay our taxes. We do everything that's expected of us as citizens.
Exactly.
And I think that they need to understand that. And I think that what we did before the hearing showed them that.
And I think it's something that you should continue to do, not just a one-off thing. Maybe get some people like that to go in and talk to more of those people to show them the light.
Yes, and we have done that on several occasions. It's hard to stand there with a veteran and say you don't deserve the same rights as everybody else. You know, they can't do it. You know, I think when I think about lobbying, I think of this story that I read one time about a class of students that was taken to the Lincoln Memorial. And while they were at the Lincoln Memorial, they were Boy Scouts. That were part of this class, and their instructor told them about how Dr. King had given his great "I Have a Dream" speech from the steps of the Capitol. And one of the kids said to him, "Well, if this was such an important speech, why is there nothing here to commemorate it?" And the teacher thought and said, "Well, I don't know." So they checked into it, and they found out that there was a law that you cannot build a monument on top of another monument. You can't put a commemorative plaque on another monument. So, which sounds like a reasonable law. But the teacher said to the boys, well, the great thing about America is if you don't like something, you can lobby to change it. So they went up to Capitol Hill, a bunch of them, and they lobbied, and they got the law changed. And when they asked the congressman that was in charge why he changed the law, didn't he think it was a good law, the congressman said, I think it's a good law, but I couldn't walk across my desk at four little boys in Boy Scout uniforms and figure out a way to say no to them. I just couldn't figure out how to do it. So I think it's the same thing with veterans. You can't say no to them. How can you say no to them after all they've done for you?
Thank you so much, Bonnie, and thank you for joining us. It was really great for you to take time out of your day, but I think you are, you know, it's as important of an issue than any other issue, you know, that people
Absolutely.
Who live here get a right to vote.
All right, guys, take care.
Okay,
thank you, Bonnie.
Thanks for calling in. And I'll yell at Kathleen for calling you Republican. I'm
Listen, you know,
now,
and
we like
I,
Republicans. Huh? Let's not,
no, we do.
I want to say I like Republicans. I know a lot of Republicans.
I do too, and I have a lot of friends who are Republican. I even have a son who
thinks he is. One of them would sign on for our bill. One of them would sign under our bill. We haven't been able to get any of them to sign under our bill. So,
well, it's a very divisive Congress, too.
Yes.
It's very divisive. And, you know, it's almost like, you know, it's evident in something like this because I think there are these Republicans who know it's the right thing, but they don't dare sign something that Democrats are on. And this is why people have to start, you know, getting up in arms and calling your office, calling your senator, calling both senators in your state and your representative and say enough is enough. I want you to work with the other people on the other side of the aisle, you know, and let's get this job done. Let's start taking care of America. And on that thought, I would tell you, I think that's the next thing that, you know, statehood's got to do, you know, is to bring kids, you know, up into these offices. And even, you know, I would say to the audience, if you feel you're not from D.C. and you're listening to us, you know, call your congressman, call your senators, and tell them that you do think this is the right thing to do. Because as you, so many people stated, a survey was done and 80% of the people outside of D.C. were shocked, didn't know that this was the way it was, that people in D.C. couldn't vote, but felt that they should.
Well, and it's easy enough to do. 202-224-3121. 202-224-3121. That's the switchboard for the United States Capitol. And all you have to do is ask for whoever your senator or representative is. And if you don't know that, you can go on to senate.us.gov or house.us.gov. And they have a little button there, and you can click your state, you can click your congressional district, and it will tell you who you need to call. But call them, absolutely, and tell them that you believe that the District of Columbia should be equal, just like everybody else. Now, I'm gonna indulge myself a little bit here, because I want everybody to understand what this means to all of us. And since I got to testify for the first time, anybody's gotten to testify on this as a member of the group, first group of people to get to testify in 21 years, I want to read my testimony. You think that's okay, Kathleen?
Yes, go ahead.
All right.
I'll zone out right now because I've heard it.
Okay,
but it's a
go take
speech.
A nap. Go take a nap and we'll have somebody hit you with a cattle prod when I'm over.
Okay.
All right. I would like to thank the committee for this opportunity to testify. Senator Carper, the first time I talked to you about D.C. statehood, you said push and keep pushing. Your cause is just and you will prevail. So here I've come to push. My constituents have been denied their basic rights of citizenship, and this is unacceptable. In spite of this, they have never shirked a single responsibility of democracy. They have always been exemplary citizens, paying taxes, serving in our military, taking on every obligation, and receiving only partial compensation in return. I know there are several proud veterans on this committee who know what it means to risk life and limb in defense of our freedom. But imagine what it was like to serve in a world war knowing that you didn't even have the right to vote for president. I am proud to represent people with this kind of character, proud to call myself a Washingtonian, knowing that D.C. residents have always cared more about America than their own self-interest. Our founding fathers established this great nation through a sacred covenant with the people based on freedom, liberty, and mutual obligation. Although we have faithfully fulfilled our end of the bargain, our government has consistently failed in its responsibility to reciprocate and has defaulted on the solemn pledge of citizenship that forms the basis of all legitimate governance. One nation, indivisible, not separate but equal. That's the promise of democracy, and for 200 years we have been denied. Once the contract has been breached, all that flows from it is tainted, and the covenant that binds us is diminished. We're tired of hearing irrelevant excuses, too small, never meant to be, a violation of the Constitution. Insults like, move if you don't like it, stop whining, go back to where you came from, only perpetuate the misconception that we expect to be given something rather than reclaiming that which is already ours. The framers may have given the power to Congress, but the right was given to us by God. I'm here to say enough. We have earned our citizenship, paid for our sacrifices, was paid with our sacrifices, our money, and our service to America, and the time has come to right this wrong, which violates every principle that Americans hold dear. You heard testimony today using words like budget autonomy, legal autonomy, voting rights. Make no mistake. Only statehood makes us whole. Any other solution glosses over the inherent inequity in our subjugation and perpetuates our second-class citizenship. Only statehood makes us equal. Only statehood resolves the injustice that resulted in us becoming colonists rather than citizens. You ask, what are the implications of S-132? They're simple. Fulfillment of an indenture as old as America itself. The final righting of a wrong that has perpetuated a political anachronism that outlived its usefulness more than 100 years ago. On this date in 1814, a member of the D.C. militia, Lieutenant Francis Scott Key, wrote a poem that became our national anthem. This morning, a group of veterans and citizens presented each member of this committee a flag with 51 stars in the inscription, in recognition of the 200,000 who have served during wartime and our special connection to the American flag. This was done to remind members that we are asking for nothing more than the restoration of our rights. We seek no favors, no special treatment, no dispensation, only the justice of equality that democracy demands. You are right, Senator. Our cause is just and we will prevail. The president said, I'm for it. Senator Reid said, we deserve it. And 80% of Americans in a nationwide poll say we support it. As a child, I stood up every morning, put my hand over my heart and said, with liberty and justice for all. I believed it then and I believe it now. And I call upon the members of this committee and in both houses to make it true and show the same courage that the residents of the district have always exemplified, not asking what's in this for me, but rather what's in this for our democracy. Dr. King said, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere, and this injustice can no longer stand. Our democracy can no longer tolerate it, our government can no longer support it, and the way to abolish it is statehood. The partisan politics that have characterized the struggle must end. We must rise above the rancor and divisiveness, act selflessly to pass this legislation, and continue to form a more perfect union. I close by answering the question my fellow Washingtonian asked 200 years ago. Yes, Lieutenant, that star-spangled banner yet waves, and it's time to add another star so that it finally waves for all of us. Thanks for listening to me ramble on. Now, Kathleen, are you awake?
Yeah. All right. Yes, no, I just, it was a great speech, but I heard it so many times that I think I've known it in my head, because you had to get it down to exactly, I think it was, what, 5 minutes or four
five
minutes?
5 minutes, yeah.
Yeah, so, and you did, and it was a great delivery, and you summed it up, and you know, many people spoke about many things, but I think that you stated it the way it is. It's just not right. It's a violation of the people of D.C.'s civil rights, and that's just what it is. You have to call it what it is. It's a wrong.
That's right. That's right. We have an old saying, somebody from your neck of the woods, Ann Richards from Texas, used to say, if it walks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, it's a duck. So this is a duck, and we need to call it a duck. We can't call it something else. And a lot of people do that. So, but we called it like it was, and I think everybody did a good job in testifying. I gave more of a speech than specifics about the intricacies, because I was the last one to speak, and I knew everybody else would talk about the implications of what this would do and some of the technical aspects of it. But I didn't want anybody to lose the sense that the reason that we need to do it is because it's the right thing to do.
That's right. And that's right. And as we are coming now, well, we still have about a minute or so left. I think that I just want to really stress to everyone who's doubts, and there's so many people out there who doubt that they have any influence on Congress or that it's just a hopeless case. It is not. I mean, this was the Senate committee. You know, and they are very powerful. But once they saw that the people were demanding and they were speaking out, I think they were really shocked, because they get it so rarely, and that's a shame. That's actually the shame, that they should be so surprised that people were calling them and saying, you're doing the wrong thing. That should be what happens every day. We should be the leaders of our country and tell our elected officials how we want to be led. And that might be a little chaotic, but, you know, we just have to do it. It really is. It's the power of all of us.
Well, you know, and let's leave on a positive note. It was a really good hearing, and yes, I think we're moving forward. And, yeah, let me reiterate what Kathleen has said prior, and that is thank you to all the people that took the time out of their day to call and help us get this done. And thank you to the hundreds of people that actually showed up for the hearing. And let's keep the support going. We hope you'll listen in next week, and we appreciate you tuning in tonight. Thank you, America.
Thank you, and have a great week.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.